Martha Whiting Brown Berry. Autobiography. I consider it a blessing and a privilege to belong to this family of Whitings and to the pioneer families Cox, Isaacson, and Clemenson Clemenson. I am the third child of Edwin Marion and Anna Maria Isaacson Whiting. They taught us mostly by example and good living, to work and play together. They gave us praise and worked with us. They took us on fishing and camping trips. Many times Father would push back the furniture in the big dining room and play blind man's buff. How we loved it! I was born at the Meadows, in Arizona, November 19, 1886. My grandfather Isaacson, who was bishop there, blessed me with the name Martha after my grandmother Isaacson. I had long, dark hair, which was fine and snarled easily. We did not have hair brushes then, only coarse combs, and I would cry when it was combed. Ma cut my long braids off and placed them in a treasure drawer. A few years ago she gave them to me and I keep them in my treasure chest. Father was a very good carpenter. He made a chest for May and one for me. I have mine now, in good condition, 73 years later, and am planning to leave it with Ruth, full of genealogy papers. This chest was very special, almost like something alive, and in it I have kept a few treasured clothes and toys of our children, Nora and Albert, who died in childhood long ago. We moved from the Meadows to St. John's, and when I was 2 we moved back to Mapleton, Utah, where Father's people lived. Mother said when I was about a year old I would sit quietly with a needle and thread and try to sew. When I was 4 I sewed enough carpet rags for a large ball, and won a 50-cent prize at the county fair. In Mapleton we bought a house close to grandmother, Mary Cox Whiting, who had uncles Fred and John at home. Aunt Harriet Curtis had a little store, which Father bought because she was ill. I never wanted to teach school or be a nurse, but I wanted to clerk in a store that sold cloth. I guess that's why I make so many quilts. I love the colored cloth. My love for music was inspired by my cousin, Clara Curtis. She played the organ for May and me, to sing duets in both Utah and Arizona. My parents bought an organ when I was 5 years old. Soon I could play chords for Mother to sing. At age 9 I was primary organist, but I only knew 4 songs. We bought a used guitar for $3, and in a few days I could play chords for the family to sing, and for many years we sang together. I taught my daughters to sing together, and entertain in church programs, and they have taught their daughters. In the summertime Pa operated a sawmill in Strawberry and Diamond Creek Mountains, where the scenery was beautiful. We all loved the summers there. One day Uncle Eck brought Cousin Lottie, Ernest's age, and they played together all day, mostly in a little stream of cold water. That night Ernest had a bad attack of croup and Father moved us home from the mountains the next day. We never went back to live as a family there. We had a store, a farm with 300 hives of bees, and the sawmill. We built an impressive brick home in Mapleton, and moved into it when I was 9 years old. We had many cousins and often held family reunions. I used to love to hear returned missionaries speak in church. I was about 13 when I heard that lady missionaries were being called. I remember the very tree that I knelt by one night and asked God to let me go on a mission someday. I felt an assurance that my prayer would be answered. I saw my 4 brothers fill missions, then my husband, 2 sons, and other relatives, but my own prayer had to wait 47 years to be answered when we went to the Central States Mission. After a serious illness, my father sold our home, store, land and cattle, and we moved to Arizona. Mother grieved about leaving her parents. We loved our home, our cousins, our friends and our way of life in Mapleton, but willingly left. We sang the song Goodbye, Old Home, whenever we went to parties, church, etc., and with tears we said goodbye to that part of our lives. In St. John's we found friendly people, but there were few flowers or fruit trees, because of the shortage of water. There were many green Lombardy poplar trees, but most of the houses were old as well as small. May had said that she would be willing to put up with anything except living in an adobe house. However, we lived in one until we were both married. Many of the young people in St. John's were so different and innocent of worldly troubles that it seemed almost like moving to a new world. Before long we were busy putting on plays. Father usually managed them. May took comedy roles and I thought I was the Sarah Bernhardt of Arizona. I think I learned more about right living than at any other time, as Father always chose good moral plays. We loved our new friends and were soon having dates, and in time all of us married good companions. I liked Frank Brown and he was impressed with me when he heard me sing. He went to school in Provo, also to Winslow to work. He worked on the railroad and then at a store in Williams and in Holbrook. He brought me a diamond, but my parents asked us to wait a year, which we did. Then we went by train to the Salt Lake Temple with Joy and Josie Patterson, and were married October 3, 1906. Frank's work was still in Holbrook. We gathered up some old furniture and borrowed some, bought 4 new chairs and a broom. I had some quilts and a rag carpet and some wedding presents. Soon Frank was transferred to the St. John's ACMI. Their Nora was born September 2, 1907. She had long, dark hair. Everything was going fine when we received a letter from A&B Schuster asking if we would go to White River, near Fort Apache, and manage their Indian trading store, which we did. I had never heard about the dangerous Apaches, therefore I was not afraid of them. They all loved Nora, with her dark hair and very white skin, and, of course, Frank and I adored her. We were lonely without a church. The beautiful White River ran about a block from where we lived. I gathered bushels of ripe currants and made jam and jelly. One day Frank received a letter from Box B. He wrote Schuster's, who said they would release him, but only because his church had called him. We wrote to see if Frank should wait until my second baby was born, but the bishop and stake president said, "No, go now." I went home to my parents, who made us welcome. In 2 months, Francis Ray was born. He had white skin and red hair. Frank returned from his mission in England and saw Ray for the first time. He was very proud to have a son. Now he spent all his energy and time getting ready to study medicine. Ruth was born September 25, 1912, and in January 1913 we went to Chicago, to what is now Loyola University School of Medicine. Soon after reaching Chicago, Nora, who was only 5½ years old, became sick and died of yellow jaundice. We traveled by train back to Holbrook, where my brothers paid for a car to meet us. Nora was buried in St. John's. Maureen A. was born August 25, 1914. We had been set apart to do missionary work while in Chicago. Years later, one of our boarders, Dr. Brent Odegaard, came to see us and told us he had been baptized. He had listened to our message and was very interested, but it wasn't until years later that he was actually baptized. Frank graduated from medical school with honors and we moved back to our home in St. John's for about 4 years. We then moved to Mesa, where Frank had a partnership with Dr. Nelson. Anna Louise was born in 1919 and Albert Edwin in 1921, John Ronald in 1922, and Maiden in 1925, all in Mesa. The Depression came and the whole world suffered. We both did lots of church work through the years. Frank had a good medical practice, did a lot of surgery and delivered about 3,000 babies in the 28 years. Albert died in Mesa of streptococcus blood poisoning when he was 9 years old. We took him to St. John's and laid him beside our little Nora. At this time we lived near Herbert and May. We moved to Salt Lake City for Frank's health, but under financial stress we returned to Mesa again. We spent a year in Provo and one in Phoenix, and in 1933 we returned to Salt Lake City, where we bought an apartment house and later a large home on State Street. The six living children were all married in the Salt Lake Temple. In 1946, the prayer I made as a 13-year-old girl was answered, and we were called to preside over the Central States Mission. It would take a good-sized book to tell all the interesting things about our mission and the joy of knowing and working with nearly 400 fine missionaries. We knew Brother James A. Cully Moore and slept and ate in his home. We traveled for 2 or 3 weeks at a time with Apostle Moyle and his wife and other church authorities. It was all very wonderful. After 3.5 years of wonderful missionary life, we were released and bought a nice home in Salt Lake City and lived for our family. After returning from his first mission, Frank told me that someday he would take me to England and show me the beautiful scenery and wonderful people there. 40 years later, he took me to England, France, Italy, Rome, Jerusalem, Switzerland, Denmark, Holland and Scotland. We arrived home in October, 1951. Frank lived about 3 more years, his health gradually declining. We went to California, where Ray, Maureen and Ronald lived with their families. Ronald and Lee, May's son, who were doctors, took care of him. Nell Whiting nursed him. He died January 19, 1955. We took him to St. John's to be laid by Nora and Albert. Before Frank died, he asked me on several occasions not to live alone after he was gone, but to marry some good man. Nearly 1 year after his death, my sister May died and left her husband, Herbert, alone. We decided to take care of each other. It pleased our children and other relatives, and we were married for time in the Los Angeles Temple, where we were both set apart as temple workers. We went with Ray and Ruth Lewis to New Zealand to the temple dedication. Later, we were set apart to help in the New West Spanish American Mission in Los Angeles. We went with Elda and Ethel to Mexico and South America, especially Brazil, and had a grand trip. We live in Alhambra, California. We play a little music together and feel that our marriage is good. More about the children. Ray is an exemplary son. He filled a church mission in Germany. He attended Brigham Young University, where he met and married Ruth Holbrook. They have 4 sons and 2 daughters. Ray served as a counselor to stake President Fornell Hunziker here for about 6 years. Ruth married Raymond Lewis. She has always been dependable, honest and affectionate. They have 2 sons and 7 daughters. Maureen is musical and artistic. She married Albert Startup and they have 11 children. She graduated from the University of Utah before marriage. Louise, 5 years younger, was a sweet and pleasant baby. She has unusual artistic skills and does beautiful handwork. She married Lester Carlston and is a fine mother to her 6 daughters and 1 son. Ronald was always dependable and happy. When his brother, Albert, died at 9 years of age, Ronald felt lost and lonely. He taught himself to read when 4 years old and always excelled in scholastic activities. He filled a mission in the northern states. He married Helen Gill and they had 5 children. His second marriage was to Jeanette Parker, mother of his last 3 children. After practicing medicine for 13 years, he specialized as a plastic surgeon. He has been wonderful to help the family with medical problems. Maiden, last but not least, has been an ideal baby girl. She plays the piano, writes poetry and prose. She married James Bedell. They have 8 children and have had rich experiences, one of which was Jim serving as bishop for 10 years. At this writing, I have 49 grandchildren, 40 great-grandchildren, no 2 are alike, but all are very dear to me. No one ever had a finer group of in-laws. It is difficult for a mother to say what she thinks about the 2 children she lost so long ago, but I do feel that perhaps they had learned the lessons they needed to know, and though I have been so lonely without them, they have made us all appreciate children more.